and we spit. Actually, in the time of my growing up, if I can indeed ever claim that I grew up, I saw some interesting things in that one denomination. I saw churches that were about as far along in spirit as the Anglicans. And I saw others that, let's say there was a lot of movement in them. You've heard of Holy Rollers. I've seen it. One little interesting story, when I was serving a church in central Louisiana, the largest Pentecostal group in Louisiana is known as the United Pentecostals. They are a oneness group, a Jesus-only group. Now, the main problem, really, with them, to me, is not that they are Jesus-only. It's just that you have to be baptized in Jesus' name only and speak in tongues in order to be saved. And of course, you got to be a part of their group too. They had a very large camp meeting every year out on the edge of the town I was in. There'd be in excess of 5,000 people at that. And it was a camp to which all of the big politicians would come and speak. They get real religious at times like that. Forgive me, I was thinking Louisiana thoughts here, and I shouldn't do that. My wife's not here to control me either, Rich. But I was, I don't know if you are aware, if I ever told you, that I spent 3 months in a mental institution studying. It was an internship program, and it was in the same town. Well, once when I was out working in one of the wards, I noticed they were setting up beds out in the hallway, and I went up to one of the psychiatrists, and I said, you're doing some redecorating, are you? Painting some rooms? He says, oh, no. We're just setting up extra beds. Tonight, they're going to be coming in truckloads. I said, is it the moon? No. He said, there's this Holy Roller camp out on the north side of town. This is their last night. And when it's over, they bring them in literally by the truckloads. I knew immediately what was up. You see, when you have to speak in tongues, and Paul tells us not all do, but when your theology says you aren't saved until and unless you do, and someone who loves God, believes in God, has been praying intently for a week and has not spoken in tongues, and they come to Friday night, and they still, in spite of all the begging and praying and crying they have done, they're not saved. They crack. And I thought, oh Lord, please don't let me ever have such a vicious theology that would do to people who love you this kind of thing. A lot of stories. Here's one with some significance to it. 100 years or so ago, General William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, wanted to send a telegram to all of his overseas missionaries just to encourage them at Christmas time. So he penned a message and sent one of his workers down to the telegraph office to send it off. And the worker came back and said, we don't have enough money to send this. They charge by the word. He said, well, go back and find out how many words we can afford, and I will pen a new message. So the laborer went back and came back and said, General, we only have enough money to send each missionary one word. Well, General Booth kind of went into prayer over that, and he came up with a word. When I heard that story many years ago, I was so inspired by it. And recently, I felt urged of the Lord to turn it into a bumper sticker. And I've done that. I have them out there. They're absolutely free. It's a vinyl one, which means it goes on and off easy. You don't have to sell your car to get rid of it. And it could be on many other things beside a bumper. I know one lady told me, I'm going to put it on the inside of my windshield, down there where I see it. And I've seen it on, students putting them on their book covers, their textbook covers. And some people putting it on their mirror inside so they see it right off. But this one word so condenses the very nature of Jesus and the very thing that I feel God has called me to talk about. And that's the word, others. Keep in mind, Jesus was the one truly others-centered person. He's chosen a project in me because I'm the one truly self-centered person. I don't know what it is about me. Isn't it funny that when even babies show this, I mean, who do they think about? Themselves. Who do teenagers think about? Nothing. Rich has several right now, so pray for him, But these are free. You're welcome to take them. And I have another one out there called Mercy. I felt led to go ahead and do some more on the nature of Jesus. I have another one that says Grace. I'll have it here in the morning if I can find it in my luggage. Go with me to Matthew chapter 16. Verse 1. Then the Pharisees and Sadducees, boy, we know these guys, don't they? Don't we? If this were modern times, you know who they would be? The Republicans and the Democrats. It's true. Nothing has changed, folks. The Pharisees were the super conservatives, man. The Sadducees were the liberals. There was another group, and that was sort of the politicians or the Herodians. I'm going to talk about those tomorrow morning in part of what I'm going to say. They were kind of the bureaucrats. And then there were the zealots, who were the radical activists. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. We just have different words for it. But we'll discover that Jesus did have some things to say about these guys that we would well be alert to today if we are going to save ourselves a mountain of grief. But let's start reading. Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came and, testing him, asked that he would show them a sign from heaven. Show us a trick, Jesus. I love it. Now, I have a little bit of a reputation for humor. And if you want to really kind of catch me flat-footed, just come up and say something funny. I can't. Or tell us a joke. I can't. You know what I mean? I don't remember any. It's a funny thing. I don't understand that. But in a way, the Pharisees knew that they probably would get a different sort of response from Jesus by saying, give us a trick, show us a sign. By the way, any of you here remember a comic strip called Kudzu? It was brilliant. Kudzu was a preacher. And he was, he was quite a mixture of preachers, but he had the typical kind of preacher problems. And finally he says, God, I haven't heard from you in so long. I've been working for you for all these years. I need to see a sign. Give me a sign. And suddenly the heavens burst open and here comes this handout with a sign in it that says, no parking. He said, that's not what I had in mind. And when we do see signs, it isn't what we have in mind, is it? In fact, I was flying from London to Los Angeles once, and I sat beside, would you believe this, a British television broadcaster. He was kind of the Walter Cronkite of England. And I was, wow, okay, And when he found out who I was, they always ask me, what do you do? Well, I have more fun than anybody in the world. I go all over the world teaching on the nature of Jesus. That immediately decides for you what the conversation is going to be like. And he said, well, you know what? The nearest thing to a miracle I've ever seen was once I found out that a high school friend of mine had attended a theater that I attended also the next night. I said, that's the best you can do. Yeah. I said, well, let me tell you of a few that I've seen. And I just started reeling off healings and other things that had gone on, you know. And he interrupted me. Well, you know, I have three children, and I want them in school to learn about all the religions so that they can make up their mind what they want to be. Oh. I said, you're a journalist, right? Well, have you ever read the New Testament? No. And you're a journalist. Yeah. I thought journalists wanted to get as close to the original documents as they could so they could cover a thing and find out if it's true. Yeah. And you've never even read the New Testament? The only thing in the whole world that has documents that prove it this much from thousands of years ago? You haven't even read that? No. He got up and left. And never came back. Well, the Pharisees want to see a miracle. Yeah, do a trick for us. You know, any of you who have heard or seen Jesus Christ Superstar, you know, they have Herod singing Walk Across My Swimming Pool kind of, you know. Well, he answered and said to them, when it's evening, you say, it will be fair weather if for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather for the sky is red and threatening. Now, have you ever noticed how Jesus smokes people out? They're probably going, oh yeah, we know that stuff. He's right down our alley. Until they hear the next word. Hypocrites! Now, I love the fact that God was not into political correctness. You know what I mean by politically correct, don't you? There's no such thing as a garbage collector anymore. They're all sanitation engineers. And I'm not short. I'm just vertically challenged and horizontally gifted. And I'm not lazy. I'm just a convenience enthusiast, okay? So... Jesus did not say, oh, you ethically challenged gentlemen. You see, that's what we do nowadays, because we wouldn't use the word hypocrite for either of these political parties. But he said, hypocrites, you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. Now, you see, these were the guys who, if anyone could. They just didn't. Sometimes it's convenient not to know what time it is. A wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. Now we know that speaks of Jesus' time in the grave and his resurrection. And he left them and departed. You know, one of the things that fascinates me is Jesus never seemed to get a whole lot of rest. If the Pharisees and Sadducees weren't attacking him, the apostles weren't understanding him. You have to keep in mind that Jesus did not choose these guys from the elite. God never, please hear me, God never reduces to the elite. If there is a reduction, he wants to see just how weak and foolish they can get. And he calls them apostles. Now you think I'm kidding you. It's true. These guys really were world-class jerks. They were so useless to Jesus. It was embarrassing. He was constantly covering for them, putting ears on heads and things like that. But all education back then was religious education. You studied the Torah, and if you were fairly sharp, you went on to the next level. If you were sharper, you went on to the next level. If you weren't sharp, they'd say, go get a job. Where did Jesus find his guys? They had jobs. They were the D students. Maybe that's why we call them the disciples. I don't know. No? Now, we're going to discover in a moment something he said to them, that he said to them more than anyone else. And it's rather surprising, rather shocking, that they would be the ones who would hear these words from Jesus. But now, when his disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And what happened to these guys? You guys forgot to bring bread. I didn't forget to bring bread. That's why he's mad. We forgot to bring bread. The very idea that we should not bring bread. And Jesus is thinking that they just, What do you think it sounded like? They reasoned among themselves. And that was about the best reasoning they could do. Oh, I tell you, we did that. Oh, man, how did this happen? These were his apostles. But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "Oh, you of little faith." Now, those are classic words. And these are words that Jesus said to the apostles more than any other group. I love the fact that he called them apostles. He could have said the old men of little faith group. But keep in mind, he chose these guys to show who he could work with. Tomorrow, I'm going to prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt that he never reduces to the elite. It is so unforgettable once you see this. But now this is wonderful, isn't it? Because once again, I look out across you and the governor of Georgia is not here. The mayor of this place isn't even here. Who are you people? I love it, see? This is one of the reasons that I've been so comfortable here. Yours was probably the same way, but my denomination is very much into eliteness. And the top dudes, this was before real Mercedes and Lexus had taken over, the top dudes in the area all drove Cadillacs. So when it came for them to have a meeting, kind of like ours, but not much, they would all rent Cadillacs and drive them there so that it would appear that they too were really good preachers. And you look at them, and they all had come right off of Fifth Avenue, man. Suits the ladies had on, dresses, man, fit to kill. And then there was me. I may be the last of their events that I attended. One of my friends, I guess he was a friend. At that point, they had got to the place where they didn't want to be seen with me. Unless it was at some other kind of conference that had nothing to do with the church. Then they said, "We all want to hang out with you." But I was just walking among all of those finely dressed people, and I was dressed kind of like this, maybe not quite this good. My wife is sort of in charge of dressing me now, and if anything matches, call her and tell her it did. I get suspenders mixed up sometimes. At any rate, one of my friends stood right beside me on an escalator in a big hotel where a conference was going on, and he leaned over and he said, "You know we hate you." I said, "Yeah, I figured that out." He said, "You know why, don't you?" I said, "No, why?" "You're the only comfortable guy here." He said, "I hear you." And I'm thinking, man, what? It was all show, you know, and that's sort of hypocritical when you stop and think about it. That was the kind of thing Jesus was talking about. These guys were all show. And he said, "You're hypocrites. You're supposed to be able to see the signs. You can see the simple signs, but the simplest of all signs, you don't see them. And you don't see them on purpose, is really what was going on. But now he's dealing with the apostles. Oh, you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you've brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I didn't speak to you concerning bread? Now put yourself in Jesus' shoes. And you're giving these guys the best theological seminary that's ever been invented. They're watching you do miracles that keep you... Oh. That wasn't a trick. You don't pick up 7 baskets full after a trick. And yet they don't understand. Isn't that amazing? You know, if you were there, you would do it different, wouldn't you? You'd understand. Surely you would. I wouldn't. I realize I'm just like those guys. I am a very slow learner. Then they understood. Well, he said, I didn't speak concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. In other words, beware of thinking that it is excessive legalism or liberalism, either one of those is your answer. Now, I say that with some fear and trepidation because I know which of the categories we are in. We are conservatives. Really conservative. Really, really conservative. Okay. So I don't need to go any further. I can just read the next verse. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Well, that's one of the areas that's a difficult one, and we tend to either not interpret it that way, or if we do, we interpret it, well, it was that way for that time. But no, the scripture is just as applicable today as it was then. And we need to be just as careful about the kind of positions that we take and political parties that we identify ourselves with to a fault. Jesus did not. When later on he says, beware the leaven of Herod, and I'll speak a little bit about that tomorrow, he was saying beware of thinking that it is a political party or political power or political influence that's going to do it for you. Keep in mind, those are the things of the world. This world is not our home. We're not citizens of this world. We're passing through. And we might get persecuted on the way. Wouldn't that be wonderful? You're aware, of course, that you know there was a whole company called the Church Growth Institute that sprang up. Now, it was really sociological church growth institute. They weren't studying the Bible to get their methods. They were studying sociology, how to move people and so forth. And for that reason, they never presented as one of their methods. By the way, you had to pay them to learn about their methods. They're bankrupt, by the way. But they never said, hey, the best way to make the church grow is to have it persecuted. Pray that you'll be persecuted. Pray that you're, who was it talked about jail? Was it you or was it Rich? Was it you? Don't go to jail. It was him? No. He's acting like it's not him. He was talking about jail. You did, all right. Well, you said don't go to jail. Maybe we should. You know, I mean, the church should really go to prayer. Our pastor's in jail. Some would say, finally. Others might say, pray that they'll keep him for a while. It was very threatening to me when I did a stint away from my church for the first time for about a month many years ago, and I came back. I asked my wife, how'd it go? Oh, the church just grew wonderfully. Now we come to a very interesting moment, because this moment comes up right after Jesus has said to them, oh, you of little faith. Now this, we don't tend to attach the two, but yet they are attached. And it also shows that we human beings are kind of like on rubber bands, you know, womp, 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 back and forth. And so now when they had come to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Now, that's an interesting question that he would ask of them. This lets us know that they were not with Jesus every minute of the day. They were out there among the people doing various things and getting back together with Jesus. They were hearing what people were saying. Maybe they recognized these guys and said, hey, you know who I think your guy is? And they'd tell them and so forth. And so Jesus asked them, what are they saying about me out there? Have you ever wondered that about yourself? What are they saying about me? You know, probably the most devastating thing is to find out that nobody's talking about you. When I was in high school, the girls mostly had a game they played. Girls can think up vicious games. Like Mother May I? I mean, any of you girls play Mother May I when you were kids? That is the most illogical game I have ever seen. If you do everything they tell you, you lose. But these girls in my high school had a game they called TLs, Trade Lies. They'd say, I'll tell you what I heard someone say about you if you'll tell me something you've heard someone say about me. Now, that's not a good game. And it ruined some friendships. And I'm thinking, why play this? So they said, well, some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. Now this, I think, was kind. I think they had other things to say about Jesus. They just didn't tell him. But they told him the good stuff. And you know the rest of this story. I just want you to see it in some ways that maybe you haven't. And then he asked the question, but who do you say that I am? And you know that is the question of eternity. Who do you say that I am? I think I've told you this story. When I was preparing to leave a pastorate in Louisiana to go over and continue my education, I got a letter that I'll tell you about in just a moment that came out of, well, I had become president of the ministerial association in that town, in that region, really. And one of my jobs was to put together a weekly a TV program. So I would get the guys together, different ones that I tried to be careful about who, I was biased about who I wanted on. I wanted believers on. And we had a good time. I was always the moderator, and it really was a good program. I enjoyed it, and apparently it had a good bit of watching public. But as a result of that, there was a consistory of nuns that, I don't know if consistory is the right word, it was a bunch of them. About 600. That might have been more multi-consistory, I don't know. I'm not familiar with their terms. That was having a conference there in that town, and these were during the Pope John the 23rd days, which at the beginning were very, very ecumenical, and there was a lot of ecumenical talk. And they asked me to put together a group who would speak to them about those ways that might be, that we might be able to, or to get together, or what might be keeping us from getting together. So I chose three other guys that I thought were really, really sharp. And then I decided to be the last speaker. As those guys got up to speak, they began to talk about things I'd never heard of in my life. They talked of events in history and moments and decisions that we're making, and I'm thinking, oh boy. There was whatever I had to say was gone. I was in a cold sweat, knowing that I was about to be proved to be a total idiot. You know it all along, but when others discovered it, it's really tough. I felt like, remember that cartoon, Lucy and Charlie Brown were out on a hillside, and Lucy says, "Charlie, what do you see in the clouds?" I see the Battle of Waterloo over here. There's Wellington and his forces, and Napoleon and his forces. What do you see?" He said, "Well, I was going to say I saw a horsey and a ducky, but I don't think I will." That's exactly how I felt. And by the time it came to me, I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I stood up in a cold sweat. And it was then the Lord let me know what to say. He couldn't trust me with this earlier. I said, "You know, you are part of a denomination that's been around a long time, and you've done a lot of things that have separated us from you and you from us. And I don't think you really want to talk about those things, and frankly, I don't want to hear. I'm a member of a young denomination, but in its short period of history, it has done many things that would separate it from other people, from you and you from us, and I don't think you want to hear about it, and I don't want to talk about it. But any time you would like to just sit down and let's talk about Jesus, I'm ready." And I sat down. It exploded. It was over. They gathered around and said, "Would you come to our town and talk about that? The priest will let you say that. You can say that in our schools. He'll let you say that in the church." And interestingly enough, since then, I have spoken in several Catholic churches, one of them in Italy. And when I had finished, one of the leaders pointed up to this huge painting of Mary, who only had one thing to say in the Bible, but they keep hearing from her. "Well, that needs to be repeated. Whatever he says to do, do it." But he pointed up at that huge painting behind the area where I was speaking, and he said, "Mary would have been real happy with what you said tonight." And then I kind of blew it. I said, "If she has any sense at all, she would have." "What?" I don't know what I've told you, but when I was speaking to about 1,000 of Catholics in Italy at a conference, and, you know, when I'm talking about the nature of Jesus, I make the statement that a lot of people believe that Mary had no birth pains, you know. And, you know, when Mary was holding the newborn baby Jesus, you see those paintings, don't you? I said, "Well, I wish my wife looked that good after our babies were born. She looked like a Mack truck had hit her." Well, you know, I finish my message, and I go over and sit down, and the leader comes up to me later, and he says, "By the way, are you aware that we don't believe Mary had any birth pain?" I said, "You're kidding." But then instantly, I knew where he was going. You see, they believe in a thing called Immaculate Conception. Now, that has to do with Mary, not Jesus. They believe Mary was born without sin, never sinned, and since pain and birth pain is the result of the fall. She was not under the fall, therefore she had no birth. I said, "Well, you know what? We're just going to have to agree to disagree because the Bible doesn't even hint at that." He said, "Yeah, I know," and walked away. "But who do you say that I am?" Now, one of the things that troubles me about this is, hey, look, they're well down the road. This isn't like day one. This isn't like where Jesus is saying, "Look, I've got some resumes I want you guys to fill out so I can see whether you're apostolic material. Can't read or write? Okay, you're in." These are the questions you settle before you start following someone. Who do you think I am? My wife and I have been married 51 years now, and I'm not ready to ask her, who do you say that I am? I like that line, what not to say to your mama unless you can know how to be resurrected. Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." Now that is a marvelous statement. What Jesus is saying is, Peter, your brain bone had nothing to do with this. You didn't figure it out, and nobody of intelligence or unintelligence ever taught you this. You got a revelation from the Father. Now, folks, that's heady stuff. Have you ever stopped to think about that? I've heard people say a lot of times, "God told me, God told me." And to many of them, I've said, "God did not tell you." "Really? You don't think so?" "No, God doesn't say things like that." "Really?" In fact, I had in counseling, would you believe this? I think she had two PhDs and was a professor at the University of Illinois and wanted me to do some counseling. And she started reading some things that she said God had said to her. And she read one. I said, "God didn't say that to you." "What?" "No, keep reading." She read more. "God didn't say that either. God doesn't say that kind of thing." And when it was over, I was the first person that ever told you. I mean, here she is. She's a professor. And they are all, you know, really smart. But I was just telling her flat out, "No, God doesn't say things like that." "How do you know?" "Because that doesn't sound like Jesus." "Oh, got to sound like Jesus." And Jesus is saying to Peter, "Peter, way to go. You didn't figure it out." Now that is so good, because once we figure something like this out, we corrupt so quickly. Man, if I figured something like that out, oh, I would be adding several doctors to my name. You can get them for $25, you know. And letters after my name, you know, UPS, PDQ. I made fun of those at once in India when I was being interpreted, and they had hired this guy to come in and do it, and I made fun of all the degrees that people want to advertise that they have. And when it was over, my translator handed me his card. There must have been 30 letters after. I don't think he ever realized what I said. It just kind of went through, you know. "But my Father who is in heaven." Now, here's the thing I want you to take note of. I got to stay here. Oh, man. This is the way God deals with us. He will not let you figure this out. I have a great amount of admiration for Albert Einstein, who said, "God is, everything else is details." But he was, when he died, you know, trying to figure God out, but the formula. He was trying to find the formula that would be the explanation of God. I think maybe that's what killed him. There is a point where our human brains can't handle it, but then sometimes I find theologians who think they've figured it out. I had made a statement once down in southern Florida at a church that had pretty much, I thought, from reading the Bible, had disproved a certain theology, and this kid comes up to him. He's in his early 20s. "How can you say that?" I said, "It was easy, right there in the Bible." "Well, he can't do it." "Yes, he did. Jesus said that." And then I realized what he was after, and I just tapped him on his forehead, and I said, "You know, you don't love God. You just love your brain. If you can't figure it out, you're not going to believe it." Well, trust me, you ain't going to do it. Well, this is so wonderful. I don't have to figure it out. Further proof of that is Jesus was partial to children. Have you noticed that? He said that's what the kingdom is made of. Why? Because children don't figure it out. They just believe him. I love to have children pray for me. Some of my best miracles have come from the prayer of children. Why? They don't know anything but to believe. When my family and I were traveling a lot when I was teaching it at college. We had summers free, and I would fill it with camps and the like. We'd camp on our way. Well, we loved to camp and tried to do it all the time in national parks. National park campgrounds fill up by 11 a.m., and we managed to always get there at 5 p.m. But as we would approach the campground, we'd pray. The whole family would pray, God, we want to camp here. Please open a campground for us. Now you know how I felt. I'm thinking, now what am I going to say to them when we don't find a campground? Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to deal with that, you know. I wasn't having faith. I was having explanations. But we would drive right by the sign that said campground full, drive around maybe one circle, and right there, the perfect spot was open. And we'd jump out and set up our tents, and the people next to us would come over and say, man, we don't know what happened. People were there a few minutes ago, and we don't know why. They just decided to leave. That happened 100% of the time. Often now, California state parks, you don't just go up to them. You have to reserve and pay ahead of time. And we camped all over California in their state parks. I'd drive up, campground full, and I'd say to the lady there in the booth, I bet that sign doesn't mean what it says. She says, how did you know? I just took a cancellation off of the fax machine. Children are that way. I mean, they don't know anything but to believe and trust God. But you see, this is what Jesus, I think, is saying to us through this that he had said to Peter. I'll tell you. I'll reveal it. You're not going to figure me out. Don't try. But listen, you know. Listen. I'll speak to you. Well, then Jesus goes on and gets rather difficult here. I also say to you that you are Peter. Now, that wasn't necessarily a compliment. You aren't even worth throwing. You're such a small stone. But on this rock, of course, that's Jesus himself and the testimony about him. I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. Now, folks, the gates of Hades does mean the grave. Don't let any Jehovah's Witnesses trouble you over that. The gates of hell, the gates of death, and the grave will not prevail against you. In other words, they're not going to be able to kill enough of you people to wipe my church off of the earth, really. Death isn't going to bother you guys. You'll be willing to die for me. And the gates of hell won't prevail against you. Now, some people think that we're in a defensive position and the gates of hell are coming at us. Nobody fights with gates. We're not in a defensive position. Satan's in a defensive position. They say, what is this old poem? Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knee. Well, this was God's job for us. And man, because I've revealed this to you, boy, you are going to have a rock on which the church will be built, and you're going to be so strong and powerful from what I have revealed to you that the gates of hell will not be able to prevail against you. You're going to win, in other words. You don't have to worry about it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. I tell a story about teaching my son how to drive, who was the fifth person in my house that I taught how to drive, including my wife, and our marriage survived it. The car didn't, but our marriage, no, that's not true. But you know how it is with us guys. There's nothing better than age 15 when we can get that driver's permit, man. It's just something about guys. It's that car is an extension of us. And when we had, my son got his license, and we had the insurance agent wanted to come out and talk to him. I said, please. And he sat there and said, son, we're going to insure you, but here's how we view you. It's not a question of if, but when. You are an aimed bullet. I'm going, I know. It's my son. So my job was to teach him how to drive, you know. And we had one of these old stick shift Datsun B210s. Any of you remember the Datsun B210s? It was just one step above a scooter. But it was an adequate vehicle, you know, and so he had never driven at all. And so I'm teaching him the clutch and everything. And finally, when his proficiency was such that we needed to go out on the streets, I said, son, we need to go to, oh, Dad, no, please, Dad. Yeah, we need to go, son. And he drove, he was so scared that my part of the car was over the ditch. But finally, he got proficient in that, and I said, son, we need to go out on the freeway now and learn how to merge and drive as if everyone else is a raving maniac. And, oh, Dad, no, please. Yeah, we got to do it, son. And so we got out on the freeway, and he was a fast learner, and he got that down. Then I said, there's one more thing we need to do that really is the ultimate. Any of you who've ever been in the Los Angeles basin know that there's a freeway called 605, goes north and south, and 10 goes east and west. When 605 going south goes into the east 10, it was designed by someone who hates humanity or is a population control enthusiast. I mean, you in about 150 feet, everybody has to change lanes. I said, son, let's go south on 605. No, Dad, please. And boy, his hands were on that wheel as we headed south. My fingerprints, I think, are still in the dashboard. And we move into that, and he looks over his shoulder to see what the last face was that he would ever see. And it was empty. And he moves over and scoots out onto 10, and he gets on 10 and he goes, thank you, Jesus. And then we go to the Department of Murder and Vehicles. And they put him through the tests, and he passes, and they hand him a driver's license. And we go home, and I am thinking about him. You know, son, you have no idea of liability. Our family fortune is in your hand. You don't understand this car. You don't know what a differential is or what a carburetor does. You have no idea of inertia. We've not been in a power stop. But even knowing that, I reached into my pocket and came out with a set of keys. And my sweaty hands turned loose of them. Now here is Jesus turning over the keys to the kingdom. And he's looking at these guys. The ones with little faith. The ones who don't get it. He's looking at Peter and thinking, there's a wreck in your future. There certainly is a ticket. And yet he hands them and us the keys. This is incredible. But remember, folks, he didn't say, now I want you to go out and find a really good machinist and see if you can make kingdom keys. See if you can figure out the keys to the kingdom. No. Just like his revealing himself to us, now he gives us the keys. It's all him so far. What do? We receive and we say thank you. But he's not through. And whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. My, all of the different things that have been written up over what this means. Let me simplify it for you. What he is saying is heaven is on your side. What you do, heaven is going to work with you on. Peter talks about that. when he talks about, you know, whatever gift we have received, let us use it to serve. If he's given you the gift of speaking, then speak as the very mouthpiece or oracles of God. Incredible. Wow. So he's saying God is on your side. He's going to take what you do and kind of multiply it. If there's something that you need to bind, we're going to really bind it. If there's something that needs to be loose, we're going to really loose it. We're going to be on your side. I want you to know that. And folks, we walk with that. I hope we understand. But so far, what is it we do that God doesn't take care of for us? See, I mean, this whole thing is God doing for us. It's like, look, I know what you're made out of, mud. And I know you're slow learners. And I know that I do not reduce to the elite, but I do reduce. And you're not the group of people the governor bothers to be with. But the King of Glory does. The Creator of the universe just loves to hang out with you. And some of you perhaps feel like, you know, I don't think God's really happy with me right now. That's a trick of the devil to say that to you. God is tickled to death with you. Well, not really. But he delights in you. It isn't a case of, oh, no, I was weighing it, and you're still just like, you know, two for you and three against you. You're going to have to do better tomorrow. And some of you might think, well, if it's only three in my favor and two in my behalf, it's not going to, two against me, and that's not good enough. None of that. He is so happy that you, his creation, choose to follow him. He can hardly stand it. He was so tickled to have you available, he paid an impossible price to get you. And he's not looking at you thinking, shouldn't have done it. Or if you kind of miss the mark at some point, he isn't going, aye. If I'd known. No, he's on your side. The anointing proves that. I'm not going to preach about that tonight. I've already gone too long. But don't think that's going to make me stop. So Jesus goes on and teaches about... you know, by this point, the Catholic Church has come to the conclusion that Peter's the Pope. Right there. Yep. There you go. Jesus doesn't say that at all. I don't think he even hints at that. In fact, I think it was a little bit of a put down of Peter. You know, you're just a pebble. You get in shoes. So from that time on, you know, Jesus said, don't talk about this. But he began to teach them about what he was going to have to go through and then to die and raise again. Then Peter took him aside. I love this moment because I think when Peter heard Jesus say, way to go, Peter. Flesh and blood hadn't revealed that to you. My Father has revealed that to you. I think Peter spaced out. I get revelation. Did you guys hear that? If I got a revelation like that, I'd have a magazine tomorrow with my picture, five times a page. Here he is contemplating the revelation. But Peter took him aside. I can see that. It's like, come here, God. I mean, he just said that's who he was. Come here, God. Now you quit talking like that. You're God, remember? I told you. And I'm on your side. This is not going to happen to you. But Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. Well, maybe he was the first pope. Sorry about that. You are an offense to me. For For you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. I got to end this. And Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself. Now that's very important, because we want to deny ourselves something. We want to quit smoking, chewing, and go in with girls that are doing that. So. But this is much deeper than that. Let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Oh, the things about what is your cross. You've got to take up your cross. And most of the time, it's something that I don't think it is. You know, maybe, ladies, you think it's your husband. And he may be part of it. I don't know. Or maybe your wife, or maybe your children, or maybe your parents. Now that I'm getting older, I'm wondering which of my kids are going to be blessed with me later. But when he said this, he had not yet been crucified. So the guys didn't understand this, and they wouldn't have, but they would have understood the cross, because thousands of people died on crosses. The Romans were very good at that. There were criminals who died on crosses, and I think Jesus is saying, take up the cross of understanding that you belong on one. And folks, I realize that if I keep that in my understanding, that I belong on a cross, but for Jesus, it keeps me humble. It keeps me from thinking, I don't know why I carry this. I'm really good. No, I'm not. I'm just a deliriously happy follower of Jesus who did it for me. So take up that cross. Live, guys, with the constant understanding that you need there. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Boy, that makes sense, doesn't it? That's an oxymoron, like Microsoft Works. What Jesus is simply saying, folks, is the way my kingdom works is when you give yourself away, then you discover, when you do that for me, for my sake, you will find your life. You will be the inexplicably happy person. You will be the unexplainable person of joy. You will be the how did you do it filled with fulfillment. And the world will sometimes say, how'd you get that? I close with an event that happened in Dallas. I was walking through. Oh, I never finished my nun story. When the time came for me to leave that town, and it was announced in the paper that I was going over to complete my education. It's never completed. They are the only ones that sent me a letter and said, the nuns of this town wish you Godspeed. I thought, wow. I found some people who were really interested in Jesus. And it's important to look at that rather than, I'll deal with that tomorrow. And I forgot what I was going to say when I was in it. What? Dallas. When they designed that airport there, they thought they had done a really great thing. They hadn't. Orlando or Atlanta beat some hands down. But I was walking through one of those endless terminals to get over to the next endless terminal. And I saw a guy coming up with what I found out was frozen yogurt. And that's okay. When it freezes you, you don't know the difference. And he was, oh, man. Now, he could have come at me with that yogurt and tried to smash it down my mouth. But boy, as he approached and was just enjoying it, I stopped him. I said, sir, where did you get that? And he told me. And I went and got my own. I didn't take his away from him. I want you to know that. But I thought, Lord, I want to make living for you and walking with you and the understanding of your grace so deep that it'll be like I am enjoying the world's greatest ice cream cone, and people start gathering around saying, where'd you get that? Where'd you get that? I want something like that. And this is what I desire for us. We're not going to win people to the Lord by what we're going to be against. But oh, when you are blessing other people and giving your lives away, I promise you, you will be fulfilled. And people will ask you, where'd you get that? Amen? Okay, amen. I think they're supposed to go home, aren't they, or something?
There's music back in the cafe. Who's playing tonight, Josh? Denise Collazo. Denise will be, you better hurry to get a seat. She brought her fans with her tonight. So Denise is back in the cafe. Feel free to hang around and mingle and fellowship. May the Lord bless you. Thanks for coming tonight. And we'll see you at 8:30 in the morning. God bless you.